Welcome to Kujip Nazarene Hospital, also known as Nazarene General Hospital. The hospital was founded in 1967. We currently serve as the provincial hospital for Jawaka Province here in Papua New Guinea. We have a catchment area of about 500,000 people, but we also have referrals that come to us from all over the highlands region of Papua New Guinea, so we serve a greater population of several million people.
When the church was established back in 1954, you know, our people were still kind of living in a Stone Age time when the pioneer Hellier missionaries came around. When they came, they never came with the intention of an hospital. They came to actually spread the gospel. But seeing the reality, the health needs of our people, they've actually, you know, established the health here. Everywhere you go, when you talk about Kujip, people always think about the hospital here. And so that has been kind of a stepping stone for us to actually evangelize to our people wherever we go.
It's something that I feel that I am free from sin and from Satan's bonds. So I feel that it's my duty to share with the people who are not aware of Christ and the love of Christ.
Oh, for the last 16 years, we have seen God is really walking in our surgery, yeah? And a lot of patients really got help. And they praise God for the great things that we are doing here.
Since last 12 years of working here, I see great things. God touches patients through our cares, like just so many people in Jawaka and Papua New Guinea as a whole.
Here, every day, I get to meet with patients that are truly desperate for not only the healthcare that we're providing, but also for God. And I'm able to actually meet both of those needs, and that's a really special place to be. And that's why I love medical missions.
I came here not because I want to work for money, but I want to serve God's people, pursue His love and compassion to all who come to my attention to care for them.
I worked in this institution for 20 years plus, and my family has a history with the first missionary, contact with the first missionary, and my daddy usually worked with the first doctor, missionary doctor, assist him with. And then when I was a kid, walking around seeing my mother work as a nurse, it motivated me to become a nurse. I really love her jobs, taking care of the patient and saw the patients with the love of Jesus Christ. And I really like to serve the people of Jawaka and Papua New Guinea. And I want to follow my footsteps that my grandparents have done to do that ministry as a health worker, supporting the church and doing God's work in this area.
Each year, through this gate, and into the outpatient department behind us, we see over 60,000 patients. We are a full-service hospital. We have lab, x-ray services, we have a blood bank, we have 4 operating rooms, 6 delivery bays, we have a minor procedure area where we can do small procedures. We have an 11-bed emergency room.
When they come here for us to help them, we also show the love of Christ. We provide compassion care here, and in a month, we deliver 250 babies to 300. And we love doing this, and it's a call for us, and we love doing this, and we'll continue to serve God here delivering babies.
There's a quote I heard once that it's our duty as physicians to cure sometimes, to relieve often, and to comfort always. And I think that sums up care as an emergency room physician on the mission field pretty well.
I've been working in the pharmacy for almost 10 years now. This is my 10th year. While working here, I've seen a lot of people come with different sickness and different needs, not only physical illness, but spiritual illness too. We treat them, we speak to them, we encourage them holistically. And I'm really blessed with my work here.
Our heart's desire is for them to not just receive physical healing, but to come to know Jesus and to know His love and make a difference in people's lives. And we hope that can happen here at the hospital.
This morning, it's our privilege to welcome Doctors Ben and Catherine Radcliffe. And this is their third time here over the years, I think the last 8 years or so. But a lot of you don't know, a lot of you are newer. Ben's grandfather was pastor here at Worcester Naz, I think for 9 years, about that, but in the late 80s and early 90s. And I followed just a few months really after he left here. So this is familiar territory, and we want them to feel welcome. So let's not only welcome them, but also their kids as they share their heart today. Can we give them a Worcester Naz welcome? Thank you.
Good morning, Worcester Naz. You always give us a really warm welcome, and we're so glad to be here. We are the Radcliffe family. We have been serving at Kujip Nazarene Hospital in the highlands of Papua New Guinea for about the last 11 years. My kids that you see here, kids, can you just stand up for a second? Everybody can see your faces, all five of them. Last time we were with you all was 8 years ago. We didn't have one of these kids 8 years ago. And so we're glad to all be back now. And I'll share a little bit about the kids with you. There we go. Simeon is our oldest. He actually just turned 14 yesterday. And he loves all things airplanes at the moment. He likes flying simulator games on his computer and visiting Air Force museums and building models. So that's a great passion of his. Matthias is our second. He's 12, and he loves anything sports. So especially the Cavs, for better or worse, at the moment. And we're big sports fans in our house, and he'll play any sport with you anytime. Naomi, with the brown hair there in the front, is 10 years old and just finished fourth grade. Naomi loves rollerblading. She loves sports as well and is a budding artist, so it's fun to watch her draw and paint. Her twin sister, Tabea, the blonde there, is also 10 years old. Tabea loves art as well and rollerblading and playing with friends, but she especially loves animals and says she wants to be a vet someday. So animals and young children are her passion. And last but certainly not least is Luca. Luca is 6 and going to be in first grade this next year. Luca loves building Legos and riding his bike and just playing. That's his passion in life. Yeah, that's what a 6-year-old does. We are grateful to be with you this morning. We are, as a family, asking and trusting the Lord to raise up financial partners who will help us. So as you hear about the story that God's telling through the Nazarene Hospital at Kujip this morning, if you feel like the Lord might be leading you to partner personally with our family through the Church of the Nazarene, you can come back and see us. You'll see this Papua New Guinea flag-shaped thing here, and we have a puzzle back there. You can take a piece of the puzzle and partner with us with a monthly gift, and we're trusting the Lord to provide for our needs as he always has, and we're grateful for many in this room who have prayed for us over the years and who have given to us on a monthly basis. We are so grateful for you. Sometimes on a Sunday morning in PNG, it might look a little bit like this for us, with singing songs and listening to a pastor preach. But some mornings, Sunday mornings in particular, we like to do what we call family rounds. It's not every surgeon who can take their whole family with them on rounds, bed to bed. If you were a surgeon here in the United States, you certainly wouldn't be able to do that. HIPAA laws get in the way of that, don't they? But in PNG, we have the privilege of having our kids join us there on rounds, praying with patients, talking with patients, caring for them, being the hands and feet of Jesus in a really tangible way. We often say that God very distinctly called Ben and me to the mission field separately, then together as a couple. Our kids didn't ask for this life, but we fully trust that God is equipping them, discipling them, teaching them through the process. And it's my prayer as a mom especially that they feel called into this life as well as missionary kids. If you know a missionary kid, you love a missionary kid. And they are the dearest kids that we know, and we have lots of them on our mission station. And we're thankful for those good friends that we can serve with there at Kujip. Many ask what I do on a daily basis. You'll hear from Ben. He's a surgeon. I'm a family doctor by training. But I'm currently not working in the hospital because I have a number of other roles as our volunteer coordinator, supporting our overseas volunteers who come and work with us. 20 to 25 of those every year come and volunteer in our hospital. And I look out for housing and help teach in our school sometimes. But really, I feel like what the Lord has asked me to do, especially in the last year, is to be available to Him, to be present, to be interruptible, you might say. I really like a schedule. I like to be organized. I like to wake up each morning and have a plan for what I'm going to do, and I like to accomplish those things. But for those of you who have been interrupted in life, you know that can feel a little bit frustrating at times. Maybe it's the big plans that get interrupted, but even the day-to-day things. Sometimes in the morning before 8 a.m., I'll have five people at my door with a need for money, school fees for their children. These ladies represent some of those needs. These ladies work in our home, in our garden, and this is us on our back porch having lunch together. But the needs here are mental health needs of children who are suffering. One lady who has concerns about sorcery and witchcraft in her community and how that's affecting her life. One of these and her daughter just lost their home in a fire because of tribal fighting that happened in their community. And we watched from our back porch as houses burned across the valley. There's a great need for Jesus in that place. And you know what God is asking of us? He's asking us to be that Jesus for them. And so, Pastor, I love his emphasis on saying yes to Jesus. Sometimes that yes can look like being willing to open the door, being willing to stop, listen, pray, be present with another person. And I think that that's really his calling for each of us, isn't it? Whether we live in Papua New Guinea or whether we live here in Worcester. No matter who it is that you encounter on a daily basis, he's asking us to give that obedient yes to him on a daily basis. And I hope that can be each of our prayer today. We are privileged, as I said, to be a part of the story that God is telling through Kujip Nazarene Hospital. And we're excited to share more of that with you today. And Ben will come and do that.
Now, I know some of you have heard about the Nazarene Hospital in Papua New Guinea for years, and you know where that is. But if you don't know where that is, Papua New Guinea is an island nation just north of Australia. It's home to about 12 million people, and we live smack dab in the middle of the highlands of Papua New Guinea, right in that purple province right there in the middle called Juwaka. And we have the wonderful privilege of serving with a team of missionaries and of Papua New Guinean colleagues who work with us every day in the hospital there. I want to talk about what it means to give the gift of consistent presence, what it means to be interruptible, what it means to say yes. We live in a world, and even within the church and in the Christian community, it's easy to be performative or to do things to be seen. And it's easy to miss the person right in front of us who needs Jesus. You see, true holiness, true love isn't a platform, it's a presence. It's the Spirit in our lives that can make a difference in the world around us. It's a love that compels us to love others the way Jesus loved a hurting world. In Matthew, Jesus said, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." I don't want to be a person whose heart is far from Jesus. I want to be close to his heart. I want the things that break his heart to break my heart. Have any of you heard the story of blind Bartimaeus? Bartimaeus was a blind man from Jericho. And every day he'd go out and sit at the edge of the road and beg. And one day, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. And Jesus is headed there to do what his father sent him to do, to go and die on the cross. He's going to do the most important work that any human in history will ever do. And if Jesus was just doing it as a performance, he wouldn't have been interruptible. He wouldn't have been present. But you see, that's not who Jesus is. Jesus is the God who stops. He's the God who's interruptible. He's the God who sees. So if you'd turn with me in your Bibles to Mark chapter 10, verses 46 to 60 or 52, we're going to read about the God who stops. It says this, "Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.' Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.' Jesus stopped and said, 'Call him.' So they called to the blind man, 'Cheer up, on your feet, he is calling you.' Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. 'What do you want me to do?' Jesus asked him. The blind man said, 'Rabbi, I want to see.' 'Go,' said Jesus, 'your faith has healed you.' Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road." This is the word of the Lord. Presence is about availability, about being interruptible, about being willing to be stuck in a place. That's what God's called our family to be there in Papua New Guinea, to be present. Over the last year, the Lord's had to teach me a little bit about what that means. We've gone through an accreditation process at the hospital. I've been spending more time in administration. We had a funding crisis where the government hadn't made good on their promises. We serve as the only province, or only hospital in our province, and the majority of our funding comes from the Papua New Guinea government. And so I spent time flying back and forth to the capital city, advocating with the government. And you see, I'm a surgeon. I, like Catherine, like a schedule, and I like to know what my day's going to be, and I like to get to the end of my operative list, and I like to get things done. Administration's not that way. It's never ending. And so I was feeling like those were distractions. And the Lord had to remind me that those distractions were actually the mission. That that's what he had called me to do for that season and that time. That I needed to be present and available for those things as well. And that to be a faithful follower of Christ, that was what he was calling me to. There's times in this last year when I felt like it was too hard. Why would God ask us to do what felt humanly impossible? I've been learning that I cannot be rooted if I'm always looking for an exit. If I'm longing for a time when I can just do whatever I want to do, I'm not doing what Jesus has called me to. Holiness for me is love in action that stays through a crisis. Love made manifest by offering the gift of presence, even when it's hard. That's when each of us can allow the Holy Spirit to work through us, to offer this gift of presence. And then miracles can happen. This is our team of missionaries that work at your Nazarene Hospital there in Papua New Guinea. They come from Samoa and the Philippines and Singapore and Canada and the United States, from all over the world. And we're really excited to be part of that team. But God has called each and every one of those families, and a lot of them have kids, and they've said yes to Jesus to be present. And each day in the hospital on rounds, I have the privilege of teaching Papua New Guineans. Some of them are doctors, some of them are nurses. We have a college of nursing there with the hospital, teaching volunteers. This picture is two Papua New Guinean young doctors who are learning how to operate, a volunteer surgeon who's come to help us, and a new missionary, and I'm teaching on rounds. And so God has called a whole group of people to be there at the hospital. I always joke and say, the Church of the Nazarene has no business running a hospital. We don't have the expertise. We don't have the financial resources. It's a miracle every day that we're able to do the ministry that God has called us to. As a surgeon, one thing that I know pretty well is anatomy. And I'm going to talk a little bit today about the anatomy of a miracle. This is Pastor Peter and his wife, Anna. Peter came to the hospital on death's door. He had been bleeding from an ulcer in his stomach and wasn't doing well. His family didn't know why. They brought him. He was admitted to the hospital. They found that his hemoglobin level was 4. It's supposed to be more than 12. If you're healthy like me and eat a lot of red meat, it might be 18. I scoped Peter and saw that he had this huge ulcer right where the stomach joins the first part of his intestines. It wasn't bleeding, but I could see the blood vessel that had caused the trouble. And right at that moment, there wasn't anything to do except to be careful and wait and hope that it would heal. And so we admitted Peter to the surgical ward to transfuse him. He got several units of blood and stabilized and was doing better. That next morning on rounds, when I got to his bed, Peter looks at me and he said, "Well, why can't I eat breakfast? Where's my breakfast?" And I was worried that he might, you know, eat something, a piece of toast that was a little too rough, and it might hit that blood vessel and we'd be in trouble. And so I told him, "Just wait. We'll get you eating soon enough. Let's let you heal up." I finished rounds and I went back to the operating room to start on the cases for the day. And I was grumpy because my first patient wasn't on the table. And I was fussing with Brian and Jonah, the anesthesia officers, and saying to them, "Well, why can't we be more efficient? I want to get things done. There's a reason why surgeons have the reputation that they have. Some of us are a little type A." And when through the doors of the recovery room came Geraldine, one of the nurses from C Ward. Peter was on a gurney. His son, Siki, was pushing him. He was on death's doorstep. He wasn't breathing. There was blood everywhere. This thing had cut loose. And the Lord helped us in that moment. Brian and Jonah intubated him. Jessly, the doctor that you saw talking about being free from Satan's bounds, she's one of the young P&G trainee doctors that I have the privilege of training. She tried to get a big IV in the vein underneath his collarbone. She couldn't get it in. The Lord helped me. I prayed, "Jesus, help us." And we got that intravenous line in so we could start giving emergency blood. We were able to get Peter onto the table. And sure enough, when I opened up his stomach, it had 3 liters of blood in it. Jessly couldn't get the bleeding to stop. I was trying to teach her how to do it, and I had to take over, and the Lord helped me. I think I just sewed everything all the way down to his spine until the blood stopped. And then we prayed that the Lord would help him to wake up, because as you can see, Peter's not a young man. I was worried that he could have had a heart attack or a stroke, but the Lord was merciful, and he woke up after surgery. He got some more blood, went back to the surgical ward, and the next morning on rounds, I'm going to ask this group over here, you have any idea what he asked me? What am I going to have for breakfast? That's right. And I said, "Oh, Reverend Peter, you almost died. You can't have breakfast yet." I let him eat 5 days after surgery, and the Lord helped him to recover. You know what's miraculous about that story? You see, I believe God did a miracle. But he did it over years by putting together a team of people who were prepared and ready to do what Peter needed that morning when he needed it. He did a miracle by knowing that I didn't need to have my first case on the table when I thought it needed to be there. He did a miracle when he got Brian and Jonah, the anesthesia officers, through nursing school and then down to the capital city of Port Moresby to get more training to be able to put patients to sleep. He did it when he called Jessly to be a doctor. He did it when he called people to donate through World Medical Mission and Samaritan's Purse, who sent that anesthesia machine over to the hospital so that that was there when we needed it. When people donated to the Nazarene Hospital Foundation so that they were able to get the special IV that I had to put in Peter's neck that day. You see, those things are the anatomy of a miracle. God is working behind the scenes, asking people to say yes to him, to build his kingdom, so that when hurting people need us, we can have that open-handed yes, and the Lord can move and the Lord can work. You see, Reverend Peter Dahl didn't just meet a doctor. He didn't just meet a group of people that had been called to serve. He met an institution that had been preparing for his arrival for decades. That's why the church should run a hospital, even though we don't have any business doing it. Because he's called us to. The world is watching to see if the Jesus that we proclaim with our mouths looks like the lives that we live. That last day at the hospital, as we were discharging Reverend Peter, he gave us this scripture and he prayed for us. And I want to give it to you all this morning. It's from Matthew chapter 10, verses 40 and 42. Anyone who welcomes you welcomes me. And anyone who welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet as a prophet will receive a prophet's reward. And whoever welcomes a righteous person as a righteous person will receive a righteous person's reward. And if anyone gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones who is my disciple, truly I tell you, that person will certainly not lose their reward. What's a cup of cold water look like this morning? I'm excited to be with you all on this Outlink Sunday. I'm blown away by the way this church is invested in the community and in things around the world. I'm grateful to be part of the Church of the Nazarene that has almost 500 missionaries around the globe. And Catherine and I get to represent them here for you this morning. I'm grateful for the World Evangelism Fund that is the way the Church of the Nazarene gives toward global missions that forms the backbone of the support for what we do around the world. Those things are cups of cold water. That morning, when Peter needed us, a cup of cold water looked like an anesthesia machine and a central line and a nursing officer who had gone to nursing school and gotten trained as a nurse anesthetist and was ready to put him to sleep. Even looked like a missionary doctor from Ohio that God had called to Papua New Guinea. We're often asked, what can we do to participate in what you're doing in Papua New Guinea? We want you to pray for us. If the Lord lays on your heart to give and partner with us, come talk to us after. We'd love that as well. But we want you to get, we want these pictures of Papua New Guinea and these stories to get stuck in your head. Can you go to that last slide for me? There's a slide of hands. It's the hands of one of my scrub nurses, Sister Edna, and the hands of one of my patients. This was taken praying before surgery. One of the great things we get to do is pray with our patients. Before we were getting ready to come back here to the States, I went out and found Reverend Peter in the village, because I had forgotten to take a picture of him when he was in the hospital and I wanted to tell his story. And when I found him in the village, he said, "Oh, doctor, I'm glad you came. I want to tell you something. That day when I almost died, as I was fainting and falling asleep, I was going up in the sky, going up to heaven, and I looked down and I could see this cloud surrounding the hospital." You've seen pictures of the drone shot of the hospital from the sky. He said, "I could see this cloud protecting the hospital, and evil and darkness on the outside, and the presence of God on the inside." And he said, "I got to the gates of heaven, and the man at the gate, em looking me, na em toko se. Now you, blowanim you ka," which translates, "Now you, why are you here? What are you doing here?" And the way he said it was like he wasn't supposed to be there. And he said, "I could see heaven on the other side, and it was beautiful, and I thought I was going to get my reward after 40 years of being a pastor." And he said, "I was ready." And then the man said that again to me. He said, now you, blow any of you come stop blow here. Why are you here now? It's not your time yet. And he told me the next thing he remembers was waking up in his bed on the surgical ward. And so I want to ask you, now you, blow any of you stuff. What is it that God's calling you? What are you doing here? You see, we're all called to follow Jesus. We're called to be people of consistent presence. To show up and to stay when it gets tough. Whether that's in Papua New Guinea or here in Worcester. I want to pray this prayer of blessing for you, and it's this. May you have the courage to stop and stay where God has placed you. And may he give you the love for you to offer yourself to the least of these around you. Let's go ahead and play that video.
Very good. Thank you, Ben and Catherine, and what a joy to have you here today. I tell you, sometimes jokingly, mine is not a happy story, but the happy story of my life is that I got to rub shoulders with people like this my whole life. Missionaries would come to our church, evangelists, stay in our home, and the things, the world came to our doorstep, literally, and I'm forever grateful for that. So what we know about Outlinks, when we go global, we're supporting. They represent, as he mentioned, not just them and their family, but all the missionaries around the world that serve. And it's world class, and we want all of you to know, especially those of you that are newer, we want you to understand that this is way bigger than just us. Pastor Andrew did a great job last week of kind of unfolding the idea of Outlinks, but could you go back and hit some highlights again and share some goals with us?
Absolutely. Last week, I was working to help us connect the dots of when you give through Outlinks at Worcester NAS, whether that's $1 in the Outlinks box or through an Outlinks promise that we're making today. It goes here in our local community and around the world through that World Evangelism Fund that Ben was just talking about, for families like them and the Hans that were here last year. They're serving in Bulgaria. But I wanted to show you just a little bit more in depth today of the things that are happening around here. These are the things in the last year, your generosity on the screen through Outlinks. This last year, we've partnered with 30 plus local partners here in the Worcester, Wayne County area. And that 59,000 number, that's the number I was telling you last week. That's what we gave to the World Evangelism Fund specifically. That's the number we're looking to push to $150,000 in this next year. And also 2,500 meals were donated in our local community through things like the fair meal that will happen in September. That's like 600 plus meals. That's just one representation of those meals that happens. And then also on this screen, you can see several different things as well, just highlights. One thing I wanted to point out was that specific offering that we gave to Jamaica, that $12,000 number for hurricane relief. And then you can see the totals of what was given through the Outlinks box. That's that dollar every week. Some, maybe it's $10 or $20 you give a week, or multiple dollar bills like Pastor will talk about. And then also the Outlinks promises that were given since last year. So that's kind of the total there with all those numbers combined, plus a celebration as well, as we challenge you this last month to give towards the $7,500 goal to build the walls for the Habitat House. And we reached that goal. So you can clap for yourselves. That's awesome. Thank you for your generosity. But all of those numbers combined, this last year, we were right around $110,000-ish. And I really wanted to highlight, too, just the Christmas jars real quick. Maybe you're not familiar. During the blessing season, which is from the Sunday before Thanksgiving through the New Year, we have the Outlinks box goes away. We have a huge mason jar, and we encourage coins, dollar bills, checks. We take it all. But those specifically go out for pastors through the Christmas jars, pastors on our NCO district. And last year, we did 8 jars totaling $12,000. In the last 17 years, we have given over $180,000 just through Christmas jars alone, which is crazy. Yeah, you can clap for that too. These next few slides, there's a printed version of all of this local stuff that you can grab from the Info Center if you want to see. These also go every month. The monthly giving is highlighted, but I wanted to just show you these more than anything, just so you know informatively that these things are available for you to see how the local things, that about $25,000 that went locally, these are the things that they went to. We gave above and beyond through so many different things this year, that $25,000, things like the Child Safety Education Program. There's the monthly Dream on Chaplaincy Program, which is at Westview. We support the Hope Center every single month. Operation Christmas Child, there was special giving that happened through that. There was the Freedom Alliance House that we got to partner with as well. So many different things that are highlighted on here all the way throughout the year we got to give. There's one here in January I wanted to point out, the Night to Shine that happens every single year. We got to give $1,000 towards that. These are things you maybe heard us talking about, but this is all of it in one place together. So these monthly things are happening. There's ways that we can be generous. And this all together, those $1,000 here, $1,000 there, that comes out to right around $25,000 that we were able to invest back into our local community. And that's the number that we want to grow to $100,000 this year. So those are just some quick highlights of the local things, the things that we've done in this last year. And the challenge today is to continue to go above and beyond that and push that $110,000-ish towards $250,000, which we'll talk about a little more here just in just a minute.
Very well, thank you. And by the way, I didn't even say it first service, I should have, but that number is not accurate for World Evangelism Fund, because by action of the church board, we're making up the difference of what our really goal is. And so that number is up over $150,000 just for the World Evangelism Fund this year that we're just finishing up. But today is the last day of our fiscal year. Our church year runs from June 1 through the 31st of May. So just so you know that. But if we're going to accomplish it, and we can, but we've all got to do our part. And so just for an example, and to those of you newer, I want to tell you, when we talk about others and outlinks, we're not talking about paying for building and things like that. I mean, it goes out. We are conscientious about that. We never redirect funds for something other than what it was intended for. So please know that. So, but this is attainable, and I want to challenge all of you. I want to challenge the kids. So glad you guys, Route 56ers, are in here today. Young adults, young marriage. I never apologize for helping us lean towards generosity. You know, we can never outgive God. When we do it together, amazing things happen in the kingdom. But I just want to give you an example of what Dixie and I do. I say often, I never want to ask you to do things that we don't do. And so what we do on a regular basis, number one, I have two pockets, one for first and one for second worship. And so all the change that we get in the week, it goes in a Christmas jar in our counter. Our kids and family know that if you've been in our home. The ones are now going that we get in exchanging money. Those go for our outlinks box. So every Sunday we bring at least $10 in each service, because a lot of you forget yours. So we're kind of make up the difference for you. But we also then, we have a lot of our giving is online. And so the very first thing that comes out is God's tithe. That happens every single week. But the second line is we always give towards outlinks, and that comes in the second wave there. But in addition to that today, so we do that all the time, but today we're going to also give a special gift, and we'll be one of those $1,000 that can make a difference that could beyond what we normally give that can help us reach that goal. So we can all do something. I don't think we emphasize enough what we can do over time, too. You know, it's not just a one and done, but we're going to keep this. So we're going to, without apology, we're going to keep this mission. We're going to keep beating the drum before you. We want this to get in our kids' hearts and our young adults, our teens, all the above. We want this to be a part of what we do so we can do even more. And God blesses a church that's known for generosity. We want to be known as a generous church, don't we? In this community and beyond and around the world. So anything to add?
Yeah, specifically that slide there, the mission slide, that $38.5 million, our piece of giving towards that is that $150,000 mark that we're looking to be a part of with our whole Nazarene church from around the world. And so when we're talking about this $250,000 goal, 100,000 here locally and 150,000 around the world, I know that number can seem really big. And I tried to help break that down a little bit last week for us. That $100,000, that $250,000 looks like 250 giving units, whether that's individuals or families together. And we don't want you to feel excluded if you can't do 1,000. We want you to give whatever you can give towards this. But our goal, the $1,000 challenge, is if 250 giving units could give $1,000, that puts us at that $250,000 mark for outlinks for this next year. And that looks like $83.33 repeating per month, which you can give on an ongoing basis, or $19.23 a week. Again, that's my iPhone doing the math. I'm not that smart.
Yeah.
So just thinking about that way, that feels a lot more attainable for me and my wife, Sam, our family, to do $84 a month. We can do that. And I think a lot of us could do that and step up and be generous in that way. So the challenge is clear. $1,000 challenge for 250 giving units from Worcester NAS this year. We can blow past this goal even. Yeah. So that's the overarching challenge. Alongside of the dollar every week, we're going to continue giving that. And then if you want to be generous, even above and beyond that, we would love for you to partner with Ben and Catherine at their table today. They mentioned it. You can give to them specifically, to them through their channels financially. Yeah. If you write a check and give it to us at the church, that doesn't really help them. It's best to connect through their channels and give it to them specifically. But we just want to be generous how the Lord has called us to be generous and living out that value that we
have. For sure. So what we're going to do now, you have cards. They've been distributed. We've been doing this the last 3 weeks. Again, Andrew talked about it last week. We're going to sit here just a moment for some contemplation. What I want you to do, everybody, I want you to talk to God about it. Ask him what he wants to do through you. That's the key. It's not a pledge. It's a promise. God, what do you want to do through me this year, through us, our family, for the cause of mission? So I just want to sit here. If you need to talk to a loved one, if you need to pray about it, but at least talk about it and say, what do we feel like the Lord wants us to do to invest our lives? What do we want to teach our kids, and what do we want to teach our grands? So we're going to sit here quietly. Nate's going to sing a little bit. If you know some of the words, you can join in. And what we're going to do, we have cards filled out. Some have placed them on the altar during the song or at the end, and some are folding them, putting in the outlinks box. Others have been dropping them off at the info center. Whatever you choose to do is fine, but the participation is the key, participation, and we're going to keep that challenge before you. All right?